Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic. As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Hello and welcome to the TIFO Football Podcast. I'm Joe Devine and today I'm joined by Seb Stafford-Blore.
You sure are, Joe Devine.
Hello. How are you?
I'm very well.
We're tired, aren't we?
Yeah, feels like we've been here for about a month. It's only actually been 6 days. Is that kind of weird?
I feel like I've always been here. And JJ Bull, who wasn't here yesterday, but I'm glad he's back. Hi, JJ.
It's nice to be back.
Is it?
Yes.
That's good. Did you have fun today?
Yes, had a great time. We watched all the football. And we were outside the office sometimes. And then others were inside the office.
Yeah.
It was a good mix.
It was a good mix of outside and in, wasn't it? What was your favourite game today?
My favourite game, I think, was talking about the Mallard. The potential new Batman villain.
Yeah, it's true. The Mallard.
It was just a game where we.
That's what the Mallard. What does the Mallard do? Not really anything, but if you feed it too much bread, it dies. That's the Mallard. Right, anyway, we'll be talking about Denmark, Belgium, the Netherlands, Austria, Ukraine, North Macedonia, and Tottenham, would you believe it? Plus, we've got JJ today and not tomorrow, so we'll do a little bit of Scotland previewing ahead of the England game, because England will probably win, and then we'll only talk about them. So it only seems fair to do that bit now, doesn't it? Yeah. But also, can I remind you that if you haven't already, I would encourage you to subscribe to The Athletic. Now, The Athletic is probably the best place online for you to read about football and indeed 10 other sports, I should say. Lots of American sports there too, plus boxing. I don't know if you'd classify that as an American sport, because you wouldn't, because it's...
Global sport.
It's a global sport.
Global sport, yeah.
But other sports are available, and some of the best writers in the world on those things. In fact, you read a piece earlier that you really liked, didn't you, JJ?
I did. It was about Memphis Depay. Mm. It's called Memphis Depay, From a Lost Soul in Manchester to the Netherlands' Leading Light. Mm. It's great. It's all about, it's a lot of inside detail about when he moved to Manchester United, why that went wrong, why it's subsequently gone well. And I'm going to stop talking in that particular pattern.
doesn't allow you anywhere else in to go.
That's the only way I can talk from now on.
Well, he did lead... away a bit today, scored a goal from penalty. Who wrote that?
Simon Hughes wrote that.
Good old Simon Hughes.
Well done, Simon Hughes. Yeah, it's a good piece. But yeah, I would subscribe just for that.
Well, if you want to do that, you can visit theathletic.com/TIFO. And that's a great place to go to do that. So go to do that at theathletic.com/TIFO. I believe you can get a 30-day free trial. So you can try it out. And if you don't like it, just don't pay and it's fine. Right, that's all from the intro. We'll be back after this bit of music. And after I say, I'll leave you in the warm hands and the cool embrace of JJ Bull and Seb Stafford-Law. Okay, let's begin with Denmark-Belgium. Denmark 1-2 Belgium, a story not told by the XG, but we'll come to that. My first point to make is, Seb, of course, ultimately, Kevin De Bruyne came off the bench and took the game completely. But prior to that, Denmark were out of the gates very, very early. They were aggressive, they were fast, they were fired up. And aside from the lovely vertical at times football that they played, it was actually quite a moving game, wasn't it?
It was really moving half. I wasn't expecting to find it that way, but it was, yeah, it was very compelling. And it just, it was that mixture of a crowd who were, you know, brimming with affection for what had happened over the weekend, the kind of the respect paid to Christian Eriksen, the effort of the players. I thought Josef Poulsen's reaction to scoring the opening goal was very touching. Clearly these guys...
Great goal, by the way.
Great goal, great finish. Clearly these guys have been through an awful lot over the last few days, mm-hmm. and it was just a lovely moment. I know they didn't go on to win, but football's about moments, isn't it? And it was very touching. I also thought that Clive Tilsley said in his commentary that apparently the hospital where Christian Eriksen is being looked after is only 400 yards from the stadium.
Yeah,
that got me a little bit. So to the moment, I think on the 10th minute when they put the ball out of play.
I don't think I've ever seen that before.
Hey, you know what? Great commentary, because we've had Clive on the podcast before, so hopefully he appreciates this. But to know when to stop talking.
Yeah.
To know when it's not about you, it's not about the football. You just get out of the way and let the human element of what's happening speak for itself. And that was great self-awareness. It's a veteran move by a great commentator.
Yeah. You are the viewer's companion.
You are. And it was, yeah, it's been... lovely moment.
I have to say the singing as well. I don't think I've heard singing. Perhaps it might not be a volume thing. It might be a unity thing. It sounded like everyone in the stadium was singing in unison for quite a long time. Haven't heard that this tournament yet. I mean, I suppose maybe that stands out because of the last year and a half.
Yeah.
But also, it was lovely.
Well, I suppose there were more people in the stadium in Copenhagen than we're used to. That's a good point. But I suppose these moments come up very, very rarely, thankfully. And it was kind of, it was something that only that kind of near tragedy could bring out, I guess. And yep. it was lovely. And
well, on that basis, a slightly different direction than we would normally go on the TIFO podcast. Regular listeners will know we're all about hard analysis. Yeah, and sometimes we dip into slightly vaguer areas of the game. But this particular game had us discussing this while we were watching it. The idea of sort of sneering at the wanting it more thing, which is something that we do sometimes. And I think often when we do that, the case, it tends to be that perhaps the commentary or the narrative around the game or the, you know, the media ahead of it, some fans perhaps, sort of making something a bit more out of it or suggesting in an ordinary Premier League game, one team wants it more than the other. We would say they're all professionals, they're all trained want it at any given moment. But there are some circumstances, of course, that you cannot countenance for, you can't plan for. And it did feel in this game that there, very much for the first 45 minutes at least before energy levels started to dip, that there was a very different way about Denmark than there was
different kind of focus.
Yeah.
And one that I suppose is quite rare in sport, because I, and when this happened at the time, I brought out a really obscure reference that you just looked at me blankly after I said it. So when James Buster Douglas beat Mike Tyson over in Tokyo, there's a really good ESPN documentary about this as well, which is called 40-1. He recently suffered the loss of his mother, who had passed away, and he was on this kind of emotional high, which brought out a version of himself which hadn't really been seen by people before. I'm by no means a boxing expert. I'm just kind of repeating other people's analysis there. But this was, it was different, and we don't want to trivialize this, but it was suggestive of something else, which is that Like when we talk about wanting it more or giving 110% or other things that in the past, JJ and I have had a little bit of a joke about on the podcast.
Well, some they feel like platitudes sometimes.
They feel like platitudes because we've gone so far in the other direction and we've over-intellectualized the sport to such an extent that there's almost no room for these kind of these intangibles. Mm. The thing to remember, though, is that the margins at the top of professional sport are really thin.
Yeah.
And so even if you've got one team performing at kind of 95% and another performing at 97%, that is very dramatic given the kind of the very small disparities between sides. And I think JJ summed it up. He was talking about like how quick everyone was into the tackle, how much pressure there was. You were talking about like the effect it had on Belgium. That was really interesting to me, the things that you noticed.
In terms of what it did to Belgium, to me, it was like they were just a yard faster. I mean, you can't be faster in terms of length, but they were just faster to everything. And the cliche of wanting it more is one part of it, but it's the aggressiveness. And it's almost like Belgium just weren't expecting it, so couldn't get up to speed quickly enough. So everything they're trying to do is like they're almost, they don't know what energy is coming at them. They're coming up with a different energy.
Yeah.
Like if you know, someone walks into the house and are like bouncy and you're just kind of chill.
Well, it was like a gaming analogy you were using earlier where you said it felt a little bit like for the earlier part of the game for Belgium, it was like their first game of the day. Whereas the Danish team had, you know, they'd played 12 games and they were like, right, they were locked in. The perfect moment.
It's like when you play especially if you play something like Call of Duty or Warzone or something like that, after a while, once you've played a few games, you're just locked in and it's when you sit forward and you're right into the game and you can predict where everything's going. You know that you're going to be in the right place at the right time and the ball sort of bounces for you because you're just in that zone. Whereas Belgium are very much like you said, the first game of the day. They need to warm up, need to go through to get themselves into the zone.
We should say, though, that Kevin De Bruyne, I don't know if I'm sure I've ever seen him play a game that looked like it was his first game of the day. He was in the zone from the moment he came off the bench, JJ.
Yeah, well, he changed the entire game. I mean, they changed the system by putting him on. So I think they took off, was it Mertens came off for him? Or was it Carrasco?
Mertens came off.
So they went from playing, so it's 3-4-3 they played, but it's like a 3-4-2-1. And when De Bruyne came on, he came in between the two forwards. So you had Lukaku went to the right and the left side, was it Carrasco, was it Mertens? Who was it?
Mertens on the right side, I think, in the first half. Yeah. And they had Thorgan Hazard on the left, didn't they?
Carrasco was playing.
The wing back. Yeah,
Carrasco, I think maybe. Let
me have a look.
Well, regardless of who it was on that side, Lukaku was definitely on the right side of the split strikers. He's left footed, so he can come off to it. So De Bruyne was like that kind of false nine he plays at Man City.
Yeah.
But what you get from De Bruyne that you don't get from Lukaku is that real aggression in the press.
Yeah.
And again, that sort of drive. Like De Bruyne takes Belgium up a couple of levels, not just because he's an amazing player, but he just makes things happen by running at them. Mm-hmm. Like rather than waiting to assess, I don't know, I can apply it again to a sort of war zone, rather than hide behind the wall and wait for the opposite team to come and eventually get you, he just charges in and gets them. Yeah. And if he gets knocked down, it's fine because teammates come in behind him. But when you go in with that aggression, it makes the other team have to adapt to how they're playing. So like if you go in hard, then they suddenly have to adjust the way they're playing because Belgium has so many good players, and it just leveled out the game. And then from there, they gained control of it, I think. There's a few other things that Belgium had. I think the first half, the spacing was far too wide between defenders. So obviously, you're out of possession. In possession shape, you want to be quite wide. You want to have lots of width to create space between lines so you can get the ball forward. And then out of possession, you want to be a bit more compact just to deny that space for those balls to come through. But what they were doing was, it's almost like they weren't trying hard enough. So they didn't seem to realize, or maybe they felt bad about Denmark or something. They weren't quite in it.
It's a tricky position to be in though, isn't it? Because if what's your role in that situation? It's very difficult to move out of the sort of the ruthless tournament mode mentality, I would have thought. Like, we kind of guess at it. We're not professional athletes, but it's a very uncomfortable position to be in because I think you probably feel like you're intruding upon something, maybe.
Well also, Romelu Lukaku and Christian Eriksen play together as well.
They're very good
friends. I mean, like, it's not like there aren't players in the other
Toby
team.
Toby Alderweireld, Jan Vertonghen, teammates of his for a long time. That is a really tricky situation for Belgium as well as Denmark.
Just to clear up the formational point, it was Carrasco on the left. It was Thorgan Hazard in the left wing back role, according to the app I just looked at. Seb, I want to talk about Kevin De Bruyne a little bit more because... Yeah. His impact on the game was magnificent. I mean, it's one of the best, albeit only half a game of football, but one of the best performances I think I've seen so far in the tournament. It's up there for me with what Pogba did for France, what Bale did for Wales. Unbelievable. And his link play with Lukaku, stunning.
Yeah, you know what's really telling is that Kevin De Bruyne played 45 minutes of that game, and yet he jumps out as the only topic worth talking about from a technical perspective. Also, and someone in the comment section was quite right, said something like he was world-class and he had a broken face. And yeah, that's kind of true. Like he's probably in a little bit of physical discomfort, possibly. But he hasn't played since the Champions League final. Hasn't played any competitive football, which is very different to conditioning and training, you know, and just, you know, doing laps on a training pitch. Steps onto the pitch at the highest level of the game and dominates the game.
And it is that's so incredible. Much better than anybody else that's already there.
I know it's a really trite point and I'm going to express it in a very kind of generic way. But he's so, 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 so good. So good.
Yeah. And it's kind of scary.
Also, the moment when he created the equaliser, another cliche, sorry about this, but it was that moment where he just did have more time than everybody else in that moment. Like Lukaku makes the burst, makes great decision. And De Bruyne is the only player on the pitch in that moment who knows exactly what's happening around him, exactly what the right ball is to play in that moment to take advantage of the numerical superiority, plays it, executes it perfectly, goal. And his own goal.
It's like he's playing FIFA from a bird's eye view instead of it, from the perspective of a player.
You know what it's like? There used to be, on the old Madden games, there used to be this facility where, like, if you threw an interception, you could press a button, and it would give you the chance to do it again. So you made a mistake. It was like I forget what it's called, like rewind or something.
Sure.
And so watching him, you know, for limited players like me. And it was like watching someone who had already made a mistake, rewound and thought, now I know where I'm going. I know what to do. I know what the outcome is here. I've seen all of this before. Here's the ball, goal, 1-1, game changed for good.
Yeah.
And his goal was, I mean, we talked about this at the time, like the kind of the fallacy of criticizing goalkeepers for getting beaten in their near post. But if you look at that, you think, right, so Kasper Schmeichel sees him shaping up on his wrong foot, his left foot, at that range, and you think, he's surely not going to hit it well enough to beat me at my near side because left foot. And yet he's good enough. And it's just...
It curves from out to in as well, doesn't it?
It's perfect.
That's great.
Perfect hit.
Everything that's weird about it, if you think about it, is that Roberto Martinez basically goes from being a bad manager and having wasted this bunch of players by losing to Denmark to suddenly being a great, or as expected, or a good manager.
Speaking of cheating.
Yeah. Because he's just put on Kevin De Bruyne. It's not like, I'm a tactical master.
Yeah, this manager's impact subs are really thoughtful. Yeah. just the best player in the world.
How does he know?
Yeah.
And yeah. But that's the thing. It's like, I mean, the tactical change obviously is that you put De Bruyne through the middle and makes a difference, but he only didn't play him from the start because he couldn't, because his face has been caved in.
Yeah.
But yeah.
There must be something about Roberto Martinez though, because I remember watching Belgium under Wilmots, and goodness, they could be bad to watch. Like you had not quite the same level of talent, but not far off. It was pretty much the same group of players, you know, with a Fellaini here and a Divock Origi there. And it didn't work. It didn't gel. There was something about either the formation, the approach, or the atmosphere around the squad which wasn't conducive to the kind of football we're seeing from this group now. There must be something about him. I've never been a big Roberto Martinez person. You've never been a big Roberto Martinez person. We've talked about this earlier.
I'm sure anyone's been a really big Roberto Martinez person.
Talk to Everton
making
fans.
It sound like I look like Roberto Martinez, but I'm much bigger and stomping around
it
like a big
like,
giant.
Yeah, you're
like,
a
fan?
Like a massive, like an appreciator. You don't really...
I don't really understand. I mean, I'm not the best placed person to... My opinion is invalid, is what I'm saying, but I've never really understood, apart from what happened at Wigan.
I suppose...
Which was exciting, right?
The Wigan thing was he liked them to play quite expressively. He played three at the back.
He played dangerously with them.
Yeah, he did. And it was kind of not what you did with a team who typically finished in the lower regions of the Premier League at the time. Then he went to Everton, good start. But if you talk to a lot of Everton fans now, they hated him. They hated his positivity and his optimism and his kind of, you know, this is what we learned, because I think they just got under their skin a little bit.
Sure.
Because the performances weren't that great.
Yeah.
And so it's a little bit of a mystery to me how he went from there, underperformance, to the job he's got now. There's no kind of in between where he, you know, corrected his trajectory. But he has created something there, and I say that without having any idea what it might be, that just works for these world-class players who seem to speak very highly of him, which is, it's hard. It feels like there needs to be an article about this. Maybe we can have a word with editorial. See
it could
what
just be. It could be that he's a very good coach.
Yeah.
So that's saying he doesn't look like a manager because, like, I think if he's shouting at you, you're not going to care that much. You're going to be like, yep.
Everyone says how nice he is.
Yeah.
That's a lot of people, journalists, like players, pretty much, I don't think you'd find anyone who had a bad word to say about the person.
And the sessions must be great. And obviously he knows what he's doing. I mean, he's taken good players and made them better at times. And he's taken teams like Wigan to win cups.
So what's the issue?
I think great. He just doesn't look like a football man.
He just doesn't look like a football man.
He doesn't look shouty enough. Do you know what he does look like, though? What? He could definitely be the Mallard. And wouldn't the manager of Belgium be a perfect foil?
I wonder if he has a wheat intolerance. Maybe he does. Yeah. We'll never know. Yeah. Anyway, the last thing I want to say on this game is that from watching Kevin De Bruyne and Lukaku, you feel like that front line, or even just the two of them on their own, could beat any team that's left in the tournament. Could score goals for sure against any team that's left. Is it, JJ, the defence that might let them down? Because at times today, they looked pretty slow. I know we've talked about them being off the pace.
Yeah.
But there have been comments before the tournament about the age of the squad. There were, I can't remember the statistic, but there's a huge number of players who were into their 30s. Amazing. I didn't realise this, but Kevin De Bruyne will be 30 before the tournament is over, which is news to me. I thought he was like 4 years younger.
It's quite the shock to you.
That's very, yeah, really shocked me. The biggest shock of the day. But the defence is old.
Well,
can you see? Can you see Kylian Mbappe just sort of walking past them?
Yeah, because they play quite a high line as well. It's the other thing.
Yeah.
So they sit high because they want to play possession football, and that's 3-4-3. So you got to push it quite high. And then you've got Vertonghen was caught a lot. He looked kind of lost for the first part of the game, I thought. Jason Denier made an error, but that's, I mean, he came in to replace Dedrick Boyata, which I'm not sure exactly what went on there because Boyata I thought was decent in the first game. And Alderweireld is not as young as he was. And no one technically is because even I'm now older than I was 5 seconds ago, for example.
Sure.
Logic and time. And yeah, I think that's, if they're playing a high line, they can get caught. That's going to be a problem for them. They are as good as anyone probably at defending aerial battles, and they've got Denier who can play it from the back, Vertonghen can play it from the back, Alderweireld can play it from the back. They kind of suit what they want to play, but yeah, someone like Mbappe, you think will cause them real problems, but they might adjust the way they play even then, just drop a bit. There's ways to do it, but yeah, that's where they're weakest, I would say. And then the midfield too, Tielemans was good today, I thought. Then Donker, not so sure about it. I thought they lacked a midfield for a lot of the game, it seemed like, and that was maybe why they were getting at the defence so often. There's no real protection in front of them.
It said, I saw it on Twitter, I forget, I think it was Philippe Auclair said there's a huge Axel Witsel shaped hole in that midfield. Yeah. I wonder what they could do to plug it. And then actually when he came on, they were a little bit better as a result of that. So I
more genius management.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But I wouldn't be surprised to see him ease back into the side. I know he's getting on now. He's another one who's in the kind of the veteran stage of their career. But Dendonka, we've said this about quite a few players from Wolves, didn't have a great season. I feel like there's a little bit of a hangover in this tournament from that. I think I'd be, Witsel for me. Witsel and Tielemans feels quite nice, I think.
Okay. Well, that was Denmark and Belgium, and we'll be right back after this.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Okay, we're back. Netherlands 2-0 Austria. I wish we'd got the XG in the plan for this game because it was extraordinarily large on one side and very, very small on the other there, Seb, wasn't it?
It was. I'm really disappointed with Austria. I might be... I might even say I'm a little bit angry.
Well, let's talk about the Netherlands first and we'll come back and put the boot in.
Okay, okay, yeah? Okay.
Because JJ, last night, I know you weren't here on the podcast, but last night we talked about the Netherlands' probable route through the rounds because we think we'll see much more of them before this is over. I was curious, before you head off again, what your general impressions of the team are so far, because we weren't really that sure what to think about them beforehand.
I think they are between a 4 and a 4.5 star rated team out of 5, if you go like, by like FIFA ratings.
Okay. Really? That high?
Yeah, probably 4, but then I think Scotland are 3.5, and they're definitely a lot better than Scotland. So
okay.
Playing maybe it's your rating it's your of Scotland ranking wrong.
Is kind of
maybe Scotland are.
I can't go lower than 3.5. Kilter. I mean, I think there needs to be a bit more honesty in your Scotland ranking.
Yeah. So, Kieran Tierney's working really hard to bring the average up there.
Maybe three.
3.25.
Anyway, I think they're fine. I think they've got. I think what they've got. Look at the players individually, like. I think Matthijs de Ligt, I remember seeing him when he was playing at Ajax. I mean, he's better now, but he's just a very, he's just a great defender. So you got, and defending's done by the team, not just individuals, but they have an individual like that who's very useful at the back. And because they defend with a three, and De Vrij as well, another good defender. The midfield, so that like Wijnaldum, who is, just, he was brilliant today, and he was in the first game, and an example of a player just really good when the shackles are let off him a little bit. He's not held so much. You know, he's not held in by the tactical instructions by the manager because his instructions are there mostly to be free. Be free, genie. He's the free genie.
That was nice.
No, I didn't even mean that. That's how good I am. Frankie de Jong, I really like him as well. And he keeps coming short to get the ball and then dragging him forwards. Like? Well, I'm sure he's a nice boy. He can run with the ball, passes a lot. You keep the ball in midfield. They've got that good midfield three that you need to keep hold of the midfield. Keeps him in midfield a lot. And then the two wing backs basically do what you want them to do. They are fast, they can hit a ball into the box, and they sometimes get into the box to meet each other's crosses. And then Memphis Depay floats around as your kind of 10. He's kind of he's one of those players that you always expect more to come out of him because you know he's got it in him.
Yeah.
And when he peaks, we'll know all about it. It'll be everywhere. He'll peak everywhere. And then you've got Vikors up front, the big man, which I think is very important in these international tournaments, is having someone to aim the ball towards. What are you laughing at? So having Vikors up front is important. And that's the thing with like this De Boer team, is that they're not scared to put the ball long up to him. So the thing with Holland teams in the past, or Netherlands teams, I should say, is that a lot of them they'll pass too much, and it's too easy to slow them down, bring the tempo right down, and you block them, they don't score. If you just then have the option to hit it long to Vikors, he can either take down the chest, head it on, threat from corners, set pieces, hugely valuable, like we've been talking about in some of our Tifo IRL videos. And then they're cliched. You want to be able to mix things up, but you want to be able to change your tempo. It's really important. And we said in the last podcast, I think it was on, they were slow to build. What's that face?
Sorry, I can't stop slow to build. Crying. Sorry.
Joe's crying.
Carry on.
It's
been quite a long 6 days, hasn't it?
In the last podcast I talked about the Netherlands on, so they're quite slow to build and they'll go long very quickly, and being able to do that, being able to mix up your tempos and be able to go short, long, medium makes you harder to play against and just gives them more options. So I think this team could be, say it was the duck man manager of Belgium again, Roberto Martinez, were he in charge, they would play the Mallard. If the Mallard were in charge of the Netherlands and they were closer together in that 3-4-3 and just passing it, I think they'd be much easier to play against. They create more, but they'd probably be easier to get at. Yeah. Whereas this Holland team's harder to break down because they're not the strongest they've ever been. So if you can get the best of both worlds, being hard to break down defensively, but also then just having players that make use of that system. So they're 4 stars.
I quite like that Vikors Depay combination.
Yeah.
Like we've talked about Vikors before on this, on the podcast, and I'm a little bit surprised nobody takes more interest in him, like, you know, transfer wise.
Alex Stewart takes a lot of interest in him.
Yeah, but I mean, I just mean that he seems kind of, from a Premier League perspective, I know we're not trying to make it a Premier League centric podcast or discussion, but like he's purpose built. Like he's brilliant at a lot of things. He's not the quickest, but he's he's like the modern interpretation of the target man. You put a Memphis Depay around him.
Mm.
Like if you allowed that combination to develop over time, it could be really, really special. And I don't know. I look at those two and I see flaws in Netherlands. Sorry. I see flaws in their defense. Like, don't trust the goalkeeper. Not sure he's the best goalkeeper of the tournament. He's a very middling kind of player.
It's Stekelenburg, isn't it?
Yeah, still Stekelenburg. Patrick van Aanholt, I think, has his issues. And I think we've seen that at Palace. But if you can make hay from that front two with Wijnaldum behind, that's actually, I don't know, I'm liking the Netherlands more than I expected to, I think.
Okay, that sounds
it's
good.
It's interesting. But I didn't have the best
night. You described Weghorst as a purpose-built, did you say? Because what I heard was you said, his pub's built. And I thought for a minute, I was like, is that a thing that people say?
You know, like, well,
when he's ready for it, his pub's built. It's already there.
I shall reflect on what I said there when I go home tonight and go to bed at the Old Red Lion Theatre Pub, which is in Angel Islington.
Well, you should mention that, the Old Red Lion.
You know, it's really comfortable.
Best
nice
pub to watch football in London.
Friendly staff, great screen, good food.
Yeah.
You know, just a really nice experience. And
if you go to the bar, ask for Uncle Damien. Yeah. He probably won't be there. Anyway, that's the Old Red Lion Theatre.
He might be. Do that.
He might be.
Yeah.
Can you put the boot into Austria now, please? I was looking forward to this bit because they were frustratingly poor. And can you look up what their XG was in this game?
I can do. I'll tell you what. Why don't you fill 15 seconds?
Fill 15 seconds.
And I will do that. Just keep doing it.
What else? What would the duck man really be good at?
I know how to fill that. Can you read that quote that I liked?
Oh, yeah. Please read me the quote.
So there's a quote I found in the comment section below the Who Scored match center of Netherlands 2 Austria.
Good website.
And I would like to read it in the voice I think that Zoltan has written it in. Mm. Zoltan's been a member since 15th of February 2020.
Mm.
Details all important. And were this to be on the audio podcast, it'd be nice with a cool bed music, like a quite horror type of music.
Yeah.
And just so you know. What is this clueless disaster called Depay going to do in Barcelona? Question mark. He has no sense of goal in him. If it were up to him, the game would end with 1-0. He will never find a goal.
He found a goal in the game.
He did, yeah. That's Zoltan.
Anyway, put the boot in, Seb.
Sure did. Right, so XG, Netherlands 3.46, Austria 0.72. That 0.72 is an absolute scandal because they were rubbish.
Yeah. Where'd they get that 0.72 from?
I have no idea. I think we'd kind of tuned out by that point.
Because when I asked you, it was after half time and it was 0.09, which seemed complimentary.
My point is,
let's really get at them.
When we looked into them before the tournament, we knew what to expect. They are less than the sum of their parts.
Sure.
And they're the big issue with them, with their watching public, is that they're boring and dull and negative and fearful. And the thing is that it's worse than that, because if you think about, if you watch a bit of Bundesliga, or if you kind of remain aware of the sort of the general European football scene, you know how good some of these players are. Sabitzer, most people know. Lima, most people know. Leiner, most people don't know, but we'll remember from the first game where he scored that, you know, lovely cushion volley. He's a very good player. Maybe they lack a proper forward, but David Alaba at the back, Hinteregger is a good player. Dragovic probably didn't turn out to be the player he was supposed to be, but still a very decent player. And they play like a minnow. They play like a team that sort of, they curl up into a ball and say, please don't hurt me.
It's like they're not even sure what they're trying to do. It's quite middling, isn't it?
No idea what they're trying to do. And worse still, it doesn't look like the players know either. There's no obvious objective to their football, which is really troubling.
I mean, can I ask you something?
Yeah.
This is the main reason I love the live chat. And being on the live stream, because Jimbo says, how can you be less than the sum of your parts? And that's I want you to explain how.
Like a philosophical question.
Yeah, exactly.
I suppose in a literal...
You can't make a snarky comment on a live stream, can you? Because there's always the threat that it might get brought up.
Bring it up in the...
Please take down Jimbo, Seb.
Jimbo, the point we're trying to make here is that if you took all of those players as individuals and assessed their ability, so if you assigned them a JJ Bull-style star system, you would tot up all of those stars and expect a certain level of performance or competency as a result of that. Austria fall well below that. So let's call them they're not an 8, but a 7 out of 10 kind of team playing as a 4 out of 10, well within themselves.
Yep, Jimbo Slice saying, Jimbo, chucking it for all the Jimbos. Fair enough.
You know, giving all the Jimbos a bad name.
Okay, we will be back after this.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Okay, we're back. And we're going to talk now about Ukraine, North Macedonia. Ukraine, of course, 2-1 North Macedonia. Crazy XG for this game. Now, I know that Alex Stewart is sat at home making eyes at me because of how I'm using XG to talk about one game. I'm going to do it anyway, Alex, because it's funny. Because they had 3.68 XG, Ukraine did, to 1.5 for North Macedonia. Open game, quite fun. Not a huge amount to analyse. We'll talk a little bit afterwards about Ukraine's next game. Must win, of course. But the thing we want to talk about as it relates to this game, Seb, was seeing great players differently out of their club teams. Now, explain to me what I mean by that.
Okay, so this was based on watching Malinovsky, who, if you've watched Atalanta, you know is a good player. But when you take them out of the context of their club side, play like that, and put them in a team where they kind of, they move up the hierarchy of abilities, all of a sudden, a couple of things tend to happen. First of all, you notice them more because when an international team has good players and isn't stuffed with good players, they tend to play a lot more of their football through that player, through that individual. So you see more of that individual, and you also tend to see like a broader range of their abilities. Zinchenko is a really good example of that too, because Zinchenko's role for Ukraine is very different, obviously, to the one he occupies for Man City. He's a kind of a... I know he plays as a left back, but he's not really a left back for...
He's a Kevin De Bruyne lookalike.
He is, and he's kind of... He's just another member. He's like a... He's like a member of the Manchester City chorus, isn't he? Mm-hmm. He's not like part of the the main cast.
He's a smaller fish in a bigger pond.
He is. And I think it's just really interesting because it's one of the charms of international football. We will be watching England-Scotland tomorrow. John McGinn falls into this category. Mm. We watched Wales last night and we talked a little bit.
Was he a large fish in a large lock?
No, I think it's more that he's a...
a huge monster.
Gareth Bale and Aaron Ramsey, we talked about last night. Mm. It's just an interesting phenomenon. Actually, in Bale's case, you see a player moving from... Bale's a wonderfully destructive player and always has been, but he's always kind of played as a peripheral member. He's not a central midfielder. He's not a core part of a team. He's a garnish and a decoration, and he's a finishing part. Whereas for Wales...
I liked Wijnaldum. Your example of Wijnaldum.
Sorry, I
cut you right in the middle there.
No, not at all. No, because there are so many, and I think it's such a constant thing. Like Wijnaldum, again, a member of a really good player, and we've known he's a really good player for Liverpool for ages, and he has the goals and the moments to prove it. Mm. But the little turns, the little tricks, the slight moments of expression, I think you see more for Holland, Netherlands, than you do for Liverpool. And I think it's one of the pluses of international football is that you get to see people in a different context.
Yeah.
And you get to learn a little bit about players. And Malinovsky, like, if you don't watch Italian football and you don't watch Atalanta, fine. Malinovsky is a joy.
Yeah.
He's just a joy. He's that archetypal, left-footed, creative sort who moves and touches the ball in exactly the right way. He reminds me a little bit of, there's a Yugoslavian player called Drulovic, who was very, very left-footed too, very creative, very pure striker of the ball. And there's something about it. I find that kind of player quite seductive, just the educated left foot and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, it's one of the things I've enjoyed about this tournament is the opportunity just to see these players outside of their natural environment and with new roles and you know, responsibilities. And it's great. It's really good. I like it.
Spinazzola, Italy, is a good example.
Spinazzola is a great
example. Out of nowhere. I mean, he plays for Roma.
Yeah.
But he was second behind even Emerson Palmieri, Italian national team, even when Emerson wasn't.
Which, if you think about what that means about someone, like if you're behind him, like he's a very average player.
And that's it. If you have a good few games, I mean, the classic is in the tournament is you have a few good games and something you get signed, like Karol Poborski in 96, that
classic
sort of thing.
Yeah.
I'm sure there must be some more scouting behind it than that. But if you impress on that huge stage, then you think, well, you'll fit
into
the squad.
I don't think there was. Like, I think I read in Alex Ferguson's autobiography, like one of the six, that he really was built around that goal. I don't think he was watching Karol Poborski before. Mm-hmm. And also, like, Poborski's career at Man United didn't really have a role to play because Beckham was coming through at the same time. Poborski was really a right winger, or attacking sort of wide forward before such a position really existed in English football. So it kind of was like I like that. Let's have some of that. Good goal. We'll sign you.
Yeah, that makes sense. I also like how you get players like Spinazzola or whatever will come to the fore and look like a really good player. He's maybe not top tier, but he could definitely play for a big club because of what he offers you with his role. But then with talking about Bale, even when he was, like, obviously he was clearly better than everyone else at the Wales team, but when he was at Real Madrid, just signed for them, he looks as one of the standouts in Real Madrid. So some players, even at this high level, stand out even higher again amongst
Yeah.
And it's the same way, I think we might have talked about this before, but if you ever play five-a-side or something with a player who has played at any decent level, they are a different species of human to you. It's so weird how they see the game. Everything's better.
They kick the ball differently.
Yeah, the technique and kicking it. They're so much fitter and stronger as well. It's weird.
I once played in a game. I must have been about 18 or 19, and it was probably the highest quality game I've ever played in. And like a weird little trial match at Kettering. And when the players around me would like switch the play, like play a ball across the pitch, 40 yards, as it went over your head, the ball would whistle. I've never heard that. Like, I've never heard that before. Like, because obviously, like, you play mostly with your friends, you sort of lump it around and it's a bit sort of airy. But I've never sort of been around that much ability. And it's a reminder that, right, at that level, which is absolutely pathetic, to that, it's like a different game. Yeah. It's crazy. That was the end of it, really. That was the end of my anecdote. I was kind of hoping you'd launch in. Yeah. You were preparing some kind of segment.
I was busy because I keep forgetting to calculate the points before we get to the end of the podcast. But we've got one more thing to talk about. Well, very briefly, will you tell me a bit about what's going on at Tottenham? Because the other day I was all excited about Paulo Fonseca. I wanted to rewatch Alex Stewart's tactics video about him. And then I came in this morning and there was talk about Gattuso. What's happening?
Right. So Fonseca issue with Tottenham fans is a little bit complicated because there wasn't a lot of enthusiasm for that, but if you took a step back and applied an open mind, you could probably make a case for it being a semi-good idea and making some kind of sense. What seems to have happened since, according to The Athletic's Jack Pitbrook, who's been great with his reporting during this, let's call it a saga, scandal, just months and months of nonsense, is that there was a tax issue with Fonseca, which I don't fully understand and which I'm probably not going to try and muddle my way through. But as a result of Reno Gattuso becoming available, he was supposed to go to Fiorentina. Fiorentina had a few issues with Jorge Mendes's potential influence upon their transfer policy. So backed away from that and they broke their deal and sort of seemed to come to some kind of mutual agreement. Tottenham jumped in, decided that, as new sporting director or managing director, football, Paratici, wanted Gattuso. Had actually planned on appointing him at Juventus, had he stayed there, had he not been removed at the end of last season. So now, who knows? This is apparently very, very close. The contract with Fonseca was completely agreed. I'm led to believe that apparently his wife was on Instagram talking about next steps and bags packed and let's go to England and isn't it going to be exciting? It was that close. And now...
Has she been to England? No, it's nice, lovely here. Yeah.
And now, goodness knows what. And I won't go into a full rant, but what I'll say is a few days ago, the club released a video which was a sort of in-house interview with Daniel Levy in which he rather kind of mockingly... spoke about how much criticism he receives from fans and how he just ignores it and, you know, how he's kind of just a bit above it, really. And you think, maybe you should hear some of that criticism. Maybe you shouldn't block it out. Like maybe you shouldn't rise above it all the time because Tottenham...
Slippery slope. I'm with Daniel.
Tottenham, well...
Don't listen to anyone.
Tottenham are into quite a dangerous area. A lot of people aren't just annoyed. A lot of people are quickly becoming disinterested. That's not a good territory for a football club. And Tottenham are nowhere.
It's worked all right for Arsenal, hasn't it?
I suppose so. But Tottenham are, goodness knows, I don't even really have an opinion about Gattuso, the manager. Like I have some about him as a player, a couple more about what he seems to be as a person. Let's leave that for another time. But as a coach, I don't know why he's...
I think Goodness Alex knows. Did a tactics video on him about his was it AC Milan?
Yes, when he took over AC Milan, I think it's about 3 years ago now. He did 2 years at AC Milan. He's just finished 2 years at Napoli. Missed the Champions League. He's won a Coppa Italia, which is an okay achievement, but I don't know. So I'm bemused, perplexed, confused. Don't know what's coming next.
Imagine
not happy.
Obvious worry as well for Spurs fans. Then be George Mendes. Surely going to make Harry Kane.
Oh, I see.
Wants to. I mean, he already wants to leave. That's
why would he say? I mean, for this, it's I would really love Harry Kane to spend the rest of his career playing for Tottenham. But
I think Conte had he gone in, you think that top tier level manager, then you kind of have you can justify wanting to stay.
You'd want to give it a chance as a player because you think Conte, winner.
Even though he wants to get away. Yeah, he still wins.
But this is, I don't even know what this is. I'm not sure. You could pretty much just about make out the beginnings of a project with Fonseca. You could have understood what he was about. Gattuso, not so much. I don't know what he represents at all. So
great footballer, though.
Yeah, nuggety, horrible, nasty, great in that way. Yeah, absolutely.
Right, well, he was good in other ways too.
No, he was a good player. No,
he was very
great
known for... I can see that you're on the edge here emotionally. I'm going to try and bring this back in.
I'm not ready to talk about it. I'm too annoyed.
You put it on the plan.
I felt like it was the right thing to do. I made the sacrifice
after Austria,
for the
podcast. He's after Gattuso. This man's unstoppable. You know who could stop him, JJ?
The Mallard.
Or me, because I'm in charge of the direction of the podcast. And I am gonna stop him and his incessant negativity. I'm going to ask you, JJ, about Scotland ahead of tomorrow, ahead of the England game, or indeed today, if you're listening to this on Friday the 18th. Big game, huge game. You know, Scotland, I don't know if they need to get something out of it, but they will really want to get something out of it. How can they do that?
It's really... I was really looking forward to this, and I'm really worried about it now. I think... one half of me thinks it might be a very simple 3-0 win first for England, which is roll over them. Scotland try and defend the way they want to. So Scotland are going to play a 1-2-2. It's 5-3-2, basically. This is what they're going to do. They're going to have a narrow... It's not a press, it's like a forward block, and try and show England wide, and then they're going to get really compact and tight and leave no space between the lines, try and frustrate them, and hit them on the counter. And they'll go for long balls towards probably Lyndon Dykes up top, and then he'll head the ball a bunch of times, and England have the ball, and they'll start again. And it could turn into one of these things. But if one of those headers goes in the right place, like see Scotland start, you notice in this tournament, I think this noticed it a lot, especially for teams who are playing at home. Unfortunately, this is at Wembley, but in the first 15 minutes, the home team just goes nuts. They come out going bananas, and they come out and they go and they manage to get a couple of goals. You saw it like Denmark this evening. Yeah. Like Poulsen's goal within 2 minutes, I think it was, or something.
Yes, I mean like that, 2-3 minutes, yeah.
Crazy early. And you get that real oomph from the fans and the momentum, the adrenaline you've got going into the game. So Scotland might be able to have that anyway. There'll probably be a few Scotland fans in the stadium. I know there's like 30,000 or something that have come down to watch the game in London. Not at the stadium, because obviously Wembley's reduced capacity. But so it's going to be those things like wanting it more. The attitude and mentality is going to be crucial in going into that battle, because there'll be some England players who will say they're looking forward to the battle. They know it's going to be a battle, and they don't know. They don't know what it's going to be like because they don't understand what's coming at them. Equally, your tactics and your system are going to be like one part of it. Your mentality is going to be a big part of it. And then I can't remember what the other part is because I've gone in myself in circles, but they need to the tactics don't really matter here. Like you're going to block them down and you're trying to hit them on the counter. And England have really good players, few weaknesses. And we'd highlighted this in the video we put out on T4IRL today. I think you can wind up Tyrone Mings and maybe make him do something stupid, whether that's get a yellow card, red card, or give away a penalty, something like that. I think you can don't press as high up as you might think you should to try and bring mistakes out of England passing from the back, which they'll do a lot. Harry Kane, if you can squeeze the space at the back long enough, he'll get bored and start dropping deep, and then he's not in front of goal to be able to score. Yeah, kick them.
I've always thought that it's a really uncomfortable position to be in as an England player, because if it's just a cold, dispassionate match, 11 versus 11, no attitude, no energy, England win.
And they should win. They're better players,
But as an England player, you're kind of in a no-win situation. You win the game 3-0 or 4-0, that's what you're supposed to do. If it's anything less, even if it's 0-0 at halftime, that's going to breed a certain amount of negativity and a bit of self-doubt. And all of a sudden, as an England player, presumably you start to think, oh, what if we lose to Scotland at home? We're going to get crucified. And you start drawing the front page of the Sun in your mind and, you know, vegetables and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And that's what the game's about. Yeah, it's about tactics and team selections. Yeah, of course. But these games, they've always been a little bit about all the other stuff, all the intangibles. And that's why I'm never comfortable playing Scotland. Like, I don't think I've ever gone into a game against Scotland thinking 5-0, because it's never really like that.
Yeah, I think Scotland will try and kill the game. And like, that's largely what the system, when I say tactics don't matter, I mean, it's all relative, right? It's all, you need the tactics, you need the players to turn up, and you need to get your game plan right. It's all part of the same thing. There are a few tactical changes I think Clark should make for this game. I think one, playing Shea Adams rather than Lyndon Dykes makes sense. If you play Dykes and Adams up front, all you're asking to do is hit long balls, which is going to head on to no one because the only runner is one of the other big men.
Okay.
I think it's a pointless endeavour. It's just long balls inviting pressure onto yourself. It doesn't make any sense. So Stephen O'Donnell plays at right wing back and has done well for Scotland. He's decent at delivering set pieces as well from that right wing. But it might be the case that you play this young guy called Nathan Patterson. He's at Rangers. He's about 19. I don't know if you've ever seen him play before.
I haven't, no.
He's really, really great. But it's a huge fixture. He's played his debut in one of the friendlies before the tournament started. And he only just got into the team at Rangers because James Tavernier was injured. So he was out. So he got in the first team. But he immediately was clearly good enough at that level. And he's clearly good enough for Scotland level because I saw him in the friendly when he played in and he was phenomenal. He was doing Cruyff turns, going past players and was really aggressive at attacking. And even if he might get beaten 1v1 defensively against Raheem Sterling, I think Stephen O'Donnell might too because Raheem Sterling's great. So you put Nathan Patterson on straight away, he's going to be fearless. He's going to be able to take you on, give you width on the right, which gives you a bit more of attacking oomph and a bit more balance across the pitch, which means Robertson can end up being isolated and turn up at the back post to attack something. It could be valuable. And also to keep the ball against England midfield, Billy Gilmore, honestly, could come in at some point. You've got to play Callum McGregor from the start to keep the ball. So he plays as like a 6 or an 8 for Celtic. And there was no one in that. Czech Republic largely blocked off the passes into Scott McTominay. But Scott McTominay's not a 6. He's an 8, goes box to box. So England's midfield should be against a 3, I think, with McGinn breaking from an 8 to become a 10. And then play probably Ryan Christie or maybe even someone like Ryan Fraser, someone quick to run off or the headers are going to hit towards Adams or Dykes. Because it's going to be a lot of long balls at the top to ease pressure from England pressing high. Because this is the weird thing, and maybe the clever thing Southgate's done, is England aren't very attacking. They're quite defensive and quite rigid and very safe. So even when you think you've got them on the counter, you don't really because there's people back. It means the game's kind of grind down and where England can be quite boring to watch, I think, at times. And it's mostly because they don't really commit in the same way like Italy. Like high press, go, it's beautiful to watch, it's lovely. Belgium does something similar. It's really nice to watch to get tempo right. England, safety first, but that's something.
They have like 10-minute spells where they're a little bit more aggressive, but then they seem to, I don't know whether it's a conditioning thing.
It's game management.
Yeah, it does seem like that. They have 10-minute spells where they really exert themselves and they are a little bit more expressive and a bit more aggressive, but then that fades away. I don't know whether that's intentional or not. But let me ask you, I think Scotland have been underestimated. You've been a little bit negative since that loss to the Czech Republic. I don't think anybody, like if there are England fans out there who are expecting 4 goals before halftime, nice and easy, nice and simple, I think that's kind of naive.
Also JJ, Murray Allen in the chat says, JJ, we won't win if you don't believe.
There you go.
This is all just, see, if England walk into this game thinking pretty much, it's Scotland, they're going to give us a battle, but secretly I know we're going to win. That's what a lot of players will be thinking. They'll get done in.
Absolutely.
And Scotland will try and kill the game, and it won't be like 3 or 4-0 from anything stupid that Scotland do. I mean, I don't think David Marsh will be quite so high off his line this time. But what you will have is that, trying to kill this game, squash it down and deny England the space that they want and then rely on that couple of counterattacks you can get out of them, a set piece. That's the kind of thing that you can do and then just battling it out and seeing out the game. Playing it dirty, I think, is the way. But there are good players. I mean, John McGinn, Callum McGregor, Scott McTominay, Kieran Tierney, if you can play, and Andrew Robertson, they're all high-tier players.
I mean, would you say they're more likely to get 3 points from the England game or from the Croatia game?
I think what Scotland will do is end up, I think I've said this before, I think they'll beat England or draw with England and then manage to get the result just below the one they need against Croatia.
Mm.
So they'll fail heroically. And it's something that I wish was not the case, but sadly is exactly the case every single time. And also something bizarre always happens with Scotland. Like even like the women's team in the World Cup, when they got knocked out, it's because of that stupid penalty line rule where the goalkeeper had to have your feet in the line. I've
forgotten about that.
It's like the first team to get called up on it, of course, at Scotland. Yeah. It's just something like this always happens. And now it's the David Marshalls get lobbed from 50 yards.
Yeah.
So like you know they were there because it's on the highlights reel. So that maybe that's...
And also that like just getting beaten from 50 yards isn't enough. He then has to get tangled in the goal net and become a meme afterwards.
It's a meme now, yeah.
And that lives forever. Like,
and it's not that I'm so much negative. It's just there's a certain level of pessimism that you not endure, but just are used to. It's almost like it makes me so sad when we are close to winning and I get excited that I'd rather just feel nothing.
When did that start? Because we watched the Czech Republic game together. Yeah. When did you were optimistic when you came in, you had your iron brew, you're happy.
You've got to risk your heart to love.
Well.
It's the rule. If you don't open up and let go, people, you can never truly be loved.
Yeah. But they've hurt me many times, Scotland.
Yeah. Well, yeah. You know. Yeah. And let's move on to the points. At the end now, we forgot to do these yesterday and I think the day before. But we'll do them now. And Alex Stewart, hero of the hour, kindly listened back to the end of Tuesday's podcast just moments ago when I texted him. So he's given me what we said then. And I can tell you, JJ, that 3-point penalty that you incurred for forgetting to make your prediction has really done you a disservice here because you are now 3 points behind first place. Mm. Alex Stewart leads the way on 30.
Okay.
JJ following up with 33. I mean, that is just
I would be level if I hadn't done that stupid thing.
Yeah. Seb next on 35. And I've brought the gap
a little smaller. You had a perfect score today.
I had a perfect score today. Yeah, yeah, what was it?
It was the
Belgium-Denmark.
Belgium-Denmark, you had 2-1.
It was the Belgium-Denmark. I was the only person to say Denmark would score a goal.
Yep. Well, yes, you were.
Mm-hmm. And I was vindicated within minutes.
You actually, there was a point where there was a fourth goal threatened. And it was one of the exciting situations where a goalkeeper gets caught up the pitch. Everyone's thinking, God, score from 60 yards.
Schmeichel up for the corner.
And you were the only person in the world hoping that it wasn't going to go in.
Well, I think quite a lot of people from Denmark also weren't.
That's probably true, but you were, yeah.
Anyway, I'm on 39, just 4 points behind you. I feel like I can make that up. I think if you can finish last, that would really make the tournament for me. I would enjoy that greatly. And I hope the TIFOs are with me as they're listening this evening.
Can we predict the next ones?
Oh, of course, we need to predict the next games, don't we? And the next games are...
Sweden versus Slovakia,
Scotland versus England, and presumably Croatia versus the Czech Republic, is it?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So, Seb, would you like to go first with your predictions?
Right, I think Croatia will beat Czech Republic 2-0.
Mm-hmm.
I think Slovakia and Sweden will finish goalless, and I fancy England to beat Scotland 1-0.
Okay, JJ?
I also think Croatia will beat Czech Republic 2-0. I think England-Scotland is 1-1. And I think Sweden versus Slovakia is 1-2.
Okay, I'm going to throw a spanner in the works.
Interesting,
here.
Interesting.
I think Croatia and the Czech Republic is going to be 1-1.
Okay.
I think England will beat Scotland 3-1. And I think Sweden and Slovakia will be 0-0.
Okay.
There we go. There we go. It's very exciting.
You've abandoned your 1-1 for all the games tactic.
Well, it didn't work.
It didn't serve you that well.
Seriously, no. He thinks he can beat you. That's why.
I'm gonna try.
He's found something that he wants to achieve in this, and now he's like it's.
Now he'll try.
Now he believes. So you're in Scotland.
Absolutely, absolutely. Right. Well, that's probably the end, isn't it? There. Thank you so much to everyone for listening today. Hope you enjoyed this episode. We will be back as usual tomorrow to discuss all of the day's games and events and other themes. And JJ, you're away for a couple of days now, but you'll be back next week, won't you?
I sure will. I think I'm back on Sunday.
Possibly yes, you be. Are.
Who knows?
Well, enjoy the game tomorrow.
I'm going to try.
Seb? Thank you again.
My pleasure, Joe.
See you later.
See you later.
Yeah. And a thanks as usual to Don and Craig, our wonderful production staff this evening. A little wave there from Don and Craig. There's one hand that's young and one older hand. There we go. Right. Au revoir, T-Pose. Until another one. Goodbye.